Welcome to Business Game Changers, where you'll hear expert tips on the big issues and the hottest trends to level up your business game. If you're building a career or building a business, this is Must Hear Radio. Here's your host, Sarah Westall.
Welcome to Business Game Changers. I'm Sarah Westall. Well, you've had to be in a cave these days to not notice that many economists around the world and experts are predicting that there's going to be a major crisis coming up this fall. Some are saying a full-blown collapse. Other people are saying a major correction. I don't know what camp I fall into. It's hard to know whether it's going to be just a complete collapse or whether we're just going to limp along, you know, maybe a correction and then limp along for a while. But I do know that we have a really fragile economy with all the debt that's out there, with the derivatives, with the power in too few hands. I mean, you need to have a diversification of power in order for there to be a balance and less risk in the economy. And we are just not sitting in that situation right now. And to make matters worse, the IMF and the Bank of International Settlements have come forward and said that the world is defenseless against the next financial crisis. So they are admitting that if there's a crisis, they can't do anything because all of their chips have already been played. So basically, where does that leave us? Where does that leave you? Where does that leave me? Where does that leave the average person to deal with protecting their wealth? Well, I think my listeners know that I have worked hard to try to bring in the top experts in finance and great economists to give us insight and different perspectives on the economy. Well, today I wanted to bring somebody that can specifically address these issues because I know this is on the minds of everyone right now. And I am bringing on Andy Shechtman, and he is the CEO and president of Miles Franklin. And he talks to all sorts of people, you know, a lot of conferences and specifically a lot with wealthy people. But his investment firm specializes in precious metals, offshore investments, investment funds, and general wealth management. And it's just a fascinating conversation that we have about the insight on the global investing environment. And he gives us some general advice on how to protect your wealth for the long term. But then we get into some really interesting thing on geopolitics and the power behind the money. And we talk about what China's end game is. You know, it's so bizarre because the prices of silver and gold are really low right now, but all most of the countries of the world, the big countries, are hoarding it. China's buying a ton of it. Major org bank firms are buying a lot of silver, investment firms. So are they purposely reducing the price of silver and gold? How can the mint run out of silver and gold and there's a 6-week wait, but yet the price is the lowest it's been? So supply and demand is completely off. And we discussed that, and it's a really fascinating discussion. But before we get into that, I have a little clip from Albert Abel, and he is the CEO and president of Jovian Energy, and their company has an amazing product that they're bringing to market, and their goal is to bring it next year. But they are working with the University of Colorado. And if you're familiar with that university, they have just an amazingly good physics program that they have over there. And they have some patents on this new technology, and they're specifically getting energy out of the quantum energy field or the zero-point energy field. And he explains what that's about and how they are actually going to be bringing this to market. So that's a really interesting conversation. Now, I'm not going to be playing that whole interview now. I'm just giving you a little snippet of it so you kind of get an idea. But my show is moving to another network. We are going to be airing live in New York. And I also am going to be doing this out of my website for any of the shows that people want to hear. And I thank Web Talk Radio because they got us going, and Brad Saul is amazing, and their staff has been very helpful. But it's time for me to you know, move my show to more of an on-air kind of, or live kind of deal. And we're going to be going out of New York and we're going to be all over the place. It's going to be on iHeartRadio. It's going to be on YouTube. It's going to be on iTunes still. So, but, you know, for any show that you want to get to, it's always going to be on my website. And once it airs live, it'll go on to all these other networks and also always be available on my website at sarahwestell.com. But this Jovian energy clip that I am about to play is going to be one of my shows that I'm going to be doing up here soon, in the next few weeks on my new network that I'm moving to. So let's listen to this clip from Albert Abel. You claim, let's get right into this, you claim to have the ability to create a device which requires no fuel, produces no waste, and supplies unlimited and continuous clean, safe, and affordable energy. How is that even possible?
You know, sir, that has been a point of contention ever since I came up with that phrase. In our business plan, I opened the plan by saying, imagine a device that requires no fuel, produces no waste, and yet produces clean, safe, affordable energy. And every time people would read that, they said, this sounds perpetual motion, free energy, or too good to be true. And quite frankly, that was a little frustrating because what I had to point out to people is, hey, I'm not the first person to do this.
Okay, so if you want to hear that exciting interview about the zero-point energy field and the quantum energy field and how they're using that to extract energy and how they're going to bring that to market, make sure to listen to my show. Like I said, it's going to be airing at 12 o'clock out of New York, and on the West Coast, it'll be 3 p.m., and it's going to be exciting. My first show is going to be with dark journalist Daniel Lentz about the Secret Space Conference. And then I will follow up with my next show with this quantum energy field product that I'm really excited about talking about. So make sure to tune in then. And now I'm going to welcome Andy Scheckman to the program.
Hi, Andy. Welcome to the program.
Hey, Sarah. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
You know that our markets are really crazy right now, and a lot of people are pretty fearful as to what's gonna happen. So with that in mind, what do you believe is the safest investment to make right now?
Well, I think right now the safest investment is mitigating your exposure to currency and to the U.S. dollar. The U.S. dollar is inordinately strong right now, but it's strong based upon and what we believe is a house of cards. There's really not a whole lot standing behind the U.S. dollar any longer, but a mountain of debt and the government's ability to tax its citizenry in order to bring in revenue. So I think you look for ways to mitigate your exposure to the dollar. And if I had to say what is the safest investment, unequivocally, I believe it is gold and silver, 100%.
Well, if you have, let's say you have money right now in stocks or bonds or whatever, what would you recommend people selling?
Well, I look at the stock market right now as being classically, by every measurement, classically overvalued. It's the S&P 500 is trading at a cumulative price to earnings ratio somewhere north of 25-1. The dividend yield cumulatively on the S&P 500 is under 2%. Now that is considered by all historical measurements classically overvalued. Typically, people in the day wouldn't buy stocks unless they were trading at single digit price to earnings ratios and paying a dividend somewhere north of 5-7%. If you look back throughout all of the years, the real money made in the stock market has been not in the indices appreciating, but rather the reinvestment of dividends. And so many of the stocks that people own nowadays don't pay anything in dividends, and they are gambling or betting on the continued appreciation of the indices. And when you look at, for example, the Dow Jones, you're within, earshot of the of the highest point we have ever been. While price-to-earnings ratios are sky-high, dividend levels are very low. And I would argue that the economy is running on smoke and mirrors, that the numbers that we see out of the Bureau of Labor Statistics are nothing but fudged bureaucratic BS. And I think it's much more difficult out there to gauge the real health of the economy by simply looking at mainstream numbers and Bureau of Labor Statistics numbers. I would argue that things are much, much more razor's edge right now. And if you can get out right now and go to cash before things, I think, correct. Yeah, I think it's good advice to sit on the sidelines right now with so much uncertainty unfolding, which we can talk about later on, all of the uncertainty and things converging at once. So, yeah, if it were my money and you were my best friend, absolutely, I'd be on the sidelines, if nothing else. If not in gold and silver, I certainly wouldn't have an overly large exposure currently to the stock market or to the U.S. dollar, if possible.
Okay, well, here's the deal. The stock market, I think, has gone up so much because the dollar has been strong and people don't know where to invest, right? A lot of money out of Europe came into the stock market, into the U.S. currency because it was so bad there. Chinese stock is falling apart. There just really isn't any place to put it. And bonds are awful. So what do you do? So you get on the sideline, you say gold and silver, but do you put all your eggs in gold and silver?
Well, first of all, let's look at the fact, your first statement. The stock market has appreciated due to the strength of the U.S. dollar. Well, the U.S. dollar is the nicest house in a crappy neighborhood. And the only reason the dollar is strengthened is because the euro has collapsed. And the Japanese are worse than the euro. And the Chinese are falling apart. And, of course, you look at the Chinese, and yes, their market is falling apart. However, they do have several $1 trillion in assets, based upon or backed up against a couple hundred billion in liabilities right now. So I'm not so worried about the Chinese. It's a speed bump for them. But as far as the rest of the world is concerned, the euro is a basket case and getting worse. And as far as I'm concerned, the fundamentals behind the dollar are ludicrous. For people to call the dollar strong, take a real look at what it is you're calling strength. Right now, the U.S. economy is saddled with almost a $19 trillion debt, and by their own admission, north of $150 trillion in unfunded liabilities in such things as Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security, government and military pensions, all the military bases we have around the world and the like. When you talk about how big that really is, you know, as a business owner, someone who's owned a company for 26 years, the concept of $1 million when I was 19 years old starting in this industry was an awful lot of money to me. But after eclipsing $5 billion in sales, the concept of $1 million isn't as big to me as it once was. And, you know, so when you talk about million or billion or trillion, the words flow off the tongue. Million's not so big. We all ascribe to be there. Now there's already several thousand billionaires. Well, how big is a trillion? You know, a $19 trillion debt doesn't sound like that much, but a trillion seconds ago, Sarah, was 31,688 years ago.
I know, trillions is ridiculous.
And
right?
So when you talk about the strength of a dollar, a country that has lost its manufacturing base, a country that taxes all the wealth producers, in the state of Minnesota, our top income tax bracket is 10.5%. backed up against 39.5% federal, and if you own a company as I do, double FICA, 15%. So me, as a wealth creator and someone who hires people, I'm making 33 cents on the dollar take home on everything that I make because of...
Oh, you're not counting in sales tax and stuff now that you have to pay
and
on everything that you have
things
to buy. Yeah,
that's correct. And so when we talk about the strength of the dollar, I would argue that if nothing else, it's an illusion. It's an illusionary strength. And you take advantage of that strength right now, which I do believe is illusionary, and you move into things of tangibility.
But the U.S. does have a lot of assets. Let's face it. I mean, we do have a country with a lot of assets everywhere, and we don't have a manufacturing base, but we do have a technology base, and I know we're not as far ahead as we have been. We're losing some ground there, but we do have assets. So if we went bankrupt, which might not be a bad thing, we will recover because we have assets sitting there.
But it is a bad thing because many of the people who own our bonds are our own citizens. and say you're bankrupting against your own citizens. And as the world reserve currency in the center of free trade, to go bankrupt, I would argue, is a bad thing. And yes, we do have assets, we do have technology, which to which we are losing ground every day. But show me a country who can dig out of such a hole that doesn't make anything anymore.
But what is the solution other than bankruptcy?
There are two solutions. It's either print or default. You're right. And that's why the concept of the government or the Fed or Janet Yellen raising interest rates is a bunch of crap. They can't. They are in a bucket. They are in a pickle. Right now, they are backed up against the wall.
So my point is, declare bankruptcy sooner rather than later, get it done with, and figure it out. I mean, because it is what it is.
Governments around the world, governments throughout all of time have chosen to ignore what is logical and what makes sense. And they've chosen the route of the printing press. The government will monetize this debt away into hyperinflation. They will do the very best.
Well, we're going to go bankrupt anyways. It just will go bankrupt under uncontrolled conditions, and it'll be a nightmare.
Yes,
versus bankruptcy under controlled conditions.
I would argue that they don't look at it that way, and perhaps chaos is actually part of the actual plan. But I look at it as if you're looking at it from their perspective, they will milk as much as they can out of the dollar until it's dead. They will do as much as they can through inflation and money creation as they can to mitigate the debt as possible until there is an uprising or a currency that stands up to challenge. A lot of people talk about the IMF meeting in October and the possibility of the Chinese issuing a convertible renminbi backed by gold as a alternative to the U.S. dollar. And we don't know if that will happen. There are a lot of
But if that does happen, could that keep us from going bankrupt?
No. In fact, it might exacerbate the situation and accelerate it as people would dump dollars and dump treasuries, popping interest rates and driving down the value of the dollar. Bankruptcy is not something that we want. It is not something that you view as a personal bankruptcy. It is a real bad thing.
Well, it is really bad. But when you're talking really bad or really, 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 really bad, maybe there's like five reallys in front of the bad versus six reallys in front of the bad.
It doesn't matter what degree of really bad happens. And it just mathematically, economically, and I don't care how you look at it, if you look at it through a logical perspective, the likelihood of us pulling out of this situation grows dimmer and dimmer and dimmer every day. And for that reason, when things have yet to hit the fan, it is important to mitigate your exposure to the dollar. If you have more than $250,000 in a bank account as a married couple or $100,000 personally, you're crazy. That's all FDIC covers, and they don't even have enough to cover it. You subject yourself to bail-in.
Let's say you sold stock and you have $100,000 or something sitting in an investment firm. What the heck do you do with that now?
Investment firms don't bother me as much as a bank. An investment firm like Schwab, a non-margined investment account like Schwab, is a much safer place to be than a bank. A bank which is already agreed or signed bail-in agreements. I think that if you keep your money in a bank versus anything over $100,000 for sure, and a bank is very risky ultimately if things go south. But in a non-margined trading account like Schwab, I think you would certainly be better off than in a bank.
Okay, well, let's say you, the banks all did bail-in agreements, right? And people don't, I know the European banks were forced to do it by, what, September? And has all the U.S. banks been forced to do that as well?
I do believe that the U.S. and Canadians have already signed on to the agreement. So, and even still, you look at recently, the FDIC has stepped up to back the banking derivative issue.
And no, well, when you they look can't at all back the, it. They don't have enough
well,
money.
Well, that's
to...
the point. That's the point. So many of us see, Sarah, what's in front of us, but do not have the ability or maybe even the desire to put the pieces together. I think just by talking with you, you see the pieces. But if you don't put them together, then you'll go back through life and say, damn it, I knew I should have done that. I saw it clearly. I saw the problems with FDIC. I saw the problems with the U.S. dollar. I saw the problems with the banking system. I saw the problem with the overvaluation of the stock market. I see the global change happening, the geopolitical problems in the Ukraine, in the Middle East, in the South China Sea, in Puerto Rico. I see the things happening. I see the change in political from Democrat to Republican. I see the class warfare. I see all of these things happening, and I don't do anything. That's the problem. It's that most people do not want to leave the comfort of the crowd and step out onto a limb and do things that are independently or require thought or require doing something that is unconventional. And I think these are unconventional times. These are anything but conventional. I believe we've been lulled back to sleep since 2008. The markets should have collapsed in 2008, and we'd be on our road to recovery right now. But they didn't let them collapse. They bailed out Lehman Brothers. They bailed out and
but see, that's my point. We can either get dragged, you know, I always envision us being dragged by a rope behind a truck and our head keeps hitting the ground. We can either do that continually, or we can just cut our losses and take a big pile of crap and deal with the bankruptcy issue and at least have a stake in the ground to rebuild.
What do you think this country would look like tomorrow if all entitlement payments ceased?
It would be a riots in the street.
That's correct. And so this is a problem that we have dug ourselves into that requires virtually one solution and one solution only, and that is to continue to print until you can't, to monetize the debt and to continue to put welfare checks out and food stamps out.
But then what happens?
Ultimately, until the system grinds to a halt, there has never been a currency ever that other than gold or silver that has lasted the test of time.
Okay, well, when will the system grind to a halt?
Your guess is as good as mine.
Can it go on for another 10 years?
I don't think so, no. But I will say this, that the powers that be have been very adept at keeping the ball in the air and keeping the game going.
They've been doing a really great job with that. I mean,
they have.
They've been doing a good job with creating this illusion.
They have, and that's a good way of doing it. They have created a new illusion or perception of reality, and you can only sidestep mathematics long enough. You can inject variables into the equation. Yes,
even
and
MIT,
ultimately,
MIT said that, and this was like 5 years ago. At our current rate, we will collapse for sure by 2032. But that was the current rate, and I think we've accelerated quite a bit since then.
Well, and that's the point. And so when I say these things, I don't think they're outlandish. I think they're backed in mathematics. And I will say this to you, that if the you know what hits the fan, you must be proactive. It's better to be 6 months or 6 years early than it is to be 60 seconds late once the door closes. And when I look at gold and silver as the place to put your money, it's not an investment. To me, gold and silver are anything but an investment. Gold and silver are wealth. It has been wealth, immutable wealth, for 6,000 years.
It's more like insurance, right? Because gold and silver is heavily manipulated, right? I mean, it's very difficult to use it as an investment vehicle. But
it's manipulated for certain reasons, and I believe ultimately the manipulation ends with it being manipulated to the upside. And we can talk about the gold and silver manipulation. I don't know how much time you have, but that's something I understand very, very, very well, something I deal with every single day.
Must be pretty frustrating for you. But let's get back let's say somebody gets on the sidelines. Let's say they have 100 grand. We didn't get to cover that. Let's say they have 100 grand sitting in cash in an IRA. What do they do? Because if U.S. dollar's awful, what do they do? Bonds are bad. Stock market's bad. What do you do?
Well, I mean, I can tell you what I did. And here again, I am not the poster child for Finance 101. I am anything but what your mainstream listeners would have done. But I'll tell you what I did, and I'll let your listeners make up their mind for themselves. I'm 45 years old. I will be in a few weeks. I have three children, young children, and this was not an easy decision for me. In 2009, when I was 39 years old, right after there was all sorts of trouble in 2008 and the money markets were starting to go upside down, the Congress debated, in fact, it even hit the House floor, taking IRAs from U.S. citizens and making us U.S. citizens who own IRAs put our investment into an annuity of sorts backed by U.S. treasuries.
Oh, geez.
And the theory behind it is that all of that money, and coincidentally, there's roughly $18 trillion in U.S. IRA money backed against an $18 trillion debt. It's uncanny. But what they were thinking was that if all of a sudden interest rates start to spike and the dollar is being dumped, they could very quickly put all this money into a treasury program, an annuity of sorts, guaranteeing payments for retirement for the people who own it. And that would stabilize the interest rate market and the dollar. And the minute that genie was let out of the bottle, now it was struck down and it never made it past the House floor. But the minute that genie was let out of the bottle, to me, I thought, geez, you know, chances are in this environment where we are heading, taxes will go higher. And the shenanigans of this type, if they're letting it out of the bottle now, don't think they don't know about it as a stopgap when things go bad. And I figured I'm out. And I said, I'll take my lumps now. And at 39 years old, I had a $675,000 IRA. I paid $67,500 penalty and about $250,000 in taxes.
Oh, wow.
Because I didn't want to be part of the system. Now, that was me. I'm unconventional, and I've never looked back, and I felt great ever since. But if you're in an IRA and you're concerned about the dollar and you're concerned about the stock market and you're concerned about all of these things, then, you know, the only thing, again, that comes to mind, you can own physical gold and silver in an IRA. That is an option. You can go to cash. You can be in a money market. You can try to be as conservative as possible. Of course, you don't make any return on that, and that's not so great when we talk about a retirement account. But here again, it is my opinion that we are living in a time where it unconventional time that calls for unconventional measures. So to me, if you're wrong, you give up a few years worth of interest. And if you're right, you save a lifetime of work from going down the drain.
Well, you know, people always ask me, well, Sarah, well, what do you do? Where can you invest? And so what you're saying is, if let's say you have an IRA, but basically there's nothing good right now. The options are gold and silver. And I've been told, I had the director of the Mint on, and he was talking about that he doesn't view gold and silver as a good investment. He views it as insurance. And I thought that was really interesting because he grew up in China and stuff, and his family, he had his whole background, his story, and it was very interesting. But my point is that there isn't anything else you can do. Bonds are bad. Stock market's bad. So let's say we have this IRA thing. We go and we do gold and silver in an IRA. Is that safe?
It's a lot safer than the bond market, which is the mother of all bubbles. I think it's safer than the stock market, which is overvalued and leveraged to the hilt. And I think that when you're dealing in a world of very few alternatives, I fall back on five, almost 6,000 years worth of history. And echoing what you just said, even though for the past, if we exclude the last 2.5, 3 years, the 13 years prior, gold and silver were a hell of an investment, but I don't view them as an investment. And I don't even know if I view them as insurance. That's an easy way of saying it. I mean, it is insurance, but to me, it's wealth. It's money. It's been that way since Pharaoh or kings or queens or emperors. None of them called their gold dealer to make an investment. They owned gold and silver as immutable wealth that they could pass on through the generations. And in times where currency and paper investments are going to be called into question, I think, yes, gold and silver are an insurance policy, or our wealth is wealth that is outside the paper system. And you know, the paper system is an experiment, if you will. The digital paper system is an experiment that I think is going to come to a halt, or to a change, shall we say. Well, things will move in a different direction once we see the U.S. dollar run into big trouble, if we do, which I think we will. And I think owning things physically, reducing counterparty risk, taking possession of your, I know people that even take possession of their stock certificates.
So can you take possession of your IRA gold?
It's a little bit more difficult. You can. There are ways of doing it. Otherwise, it's held by a custodian. And the one that I would recommend is in Fargo, North Dakota, the Dakota Depository. So you have to work with the right IRA custodian in the first place, one that will allow you to do this. But yes, you can, in certain instances, take physical possession.
Well, there's a couple issues that I've seen with this. And the first one is, let's say you have an IRA and you want to put 100 grand or something into gold and silver. Do the brokers charge a ridiculous amount for buying that IRA gold?
No, absolutely not.
They'll give you market rates and they're not going to gouge you at this point.
We sell it. We sell that. Absolutely. We do many of those. And no, it's a very competitive marketplace. So it's anything but that when you're buying gold and silver bullion. It's very, very transparent and small margins.
Well, and then the other question is, let's say during the Depression, when people had gold and silver, well, gold, I don't think silver had this happen to them, the government confiscated their gold.
That was a different time, and I don't think you'll see confiscation again. That was 1933.
Why do you think that won't happen this time?
Well, the first time it was confiscated, people used gold as money. Prior to 1933, there were gold coins that were circulating as money and silver coins. There were three $1 coins, two $2.50s, a three, a four, two $5s, two $10s, and two $20 gold coins. So it wouldn't have been uncommon back then for you to have a pocket full of gold as you're walking down the street. It was money. It was $20 gold coin or $10 gold coin. That was normal. Everyone owned gold. And so to take in gold, in fact, when they confiscated gold, they paid the people who turned in their gold more than the value of the gold coins were worth, according to the U.S. government at that time. Then the government devalued the dollar or revalued gold to 35 an ounce. So anyone who hung on to it made 90%. The point of it is, with all of that being said, is that the likelihood of gold confiscation now, I believe, is slim to none. Number one, and the reason I view that, number one, you have countries all around the world, like communist China, promoting and endorsing and allowing gold ownership to their citizenry. And we, as a center of free trade and the global reserve currency, if we enacted eminent domain and we took gold from our citizens and our creditors viewed Venezuelan-style nationalization of assets as a reality, they would never trust us ever again. They would dump treasury so fast, interest rates would hit double digits overnight. They would dump dollars. They would never buy anything.
But they're not going to trust us anyways if the whole economy collapses.
Yeah, well, but even still, the amount of gold in this country is the pimple on the elephant. Most of the people I've known my whole life wouldn't know a gold coin if it fell on their foot. Instead, what I believe that they have done to take care of these problems, instead of going door to door where so many people own guns nowadays and dislike government edict anyway, instead of doing that and looking at the pimple on the elephant where so few people actually own it anyway versus 1933 where everyone owned it because it was legal tender. Instead, what I believe they have done very adeptly is create the ETFs that physically own gold, GLD and SLV.
Yeah, because ETFs are almost worthless, right? Because if the dollar collapses, you won't have value.
Well, you don't, but the ETF does, in the respect that ETF physically stores the gold held and SLV physically stores the silver held. 99% of the people who own it can't take possession of it. The only people that can take possession of the metal are the very large basket holders, and the amounts are millions and millions and millions of dollars in order to request redemption.
So that's an unsafe investment, right? I mean,
well, but what it is, in my opinion, to answer your question, the government could come in on a Friday night. Now, keep in mind, GLD is one of the four or five largest stockpiles of gold in the world, and SLV is the largest single stockpile of silver in the world. Government comes in on a Friday night, closes those two accounts, which the prospectus gives them right to do, pays everyone off in dollars, just like they did in 1933, only this time they're not violating any civil liberties or breaking any laws. All they're doing are closing the accounts and remunerating everyone, whatever that the price was of SLV and GLD at close of Friday night. On Monday morning, you wake up and you have that money in your money market, and the U.S. looks at the world, shrugs at her shoulders, and says, hey, we didn't activate eminent domain. We did not take gold from our citizenry. You can still own physical gold here. All we did was close these two accounts. And if they did that, they would be sitting on the fifth largest stockpile of gold in the world and the largest single stockpile of silver in the world, held by HSBC Bank and JP Morgan Bank with pink bows wrapped around them, without going door to door, without risking life and limb, without risking the backlash that the rest of the world would say, yeah, you're going into trouble, fine, but you don't, you know, you're confiscating assets from your people. We will never trust you again. It's too big of a problem for them to do it this time. And that's why I think they made the ETFs a nice central location where they can easily confiscate it without the backlash and not without the violation of civil liberty.
And then they're set. That's enough to be able to keep our country safe.
Well, that's the argument. And now people can
But then the dollar will still get screwed up, and then they'll recreate a new currency backed by what those lump piles of stuff.
Well, a lot of people think that's the ultimate end game, that they issue some sort of a commoditized backed currency or gold backed currency, because whoever steps up to be the world reserve after the you know what hits the fan, that they will not drink the Kool-Aid ever again if it's not backed by something that doesn't just allow politicians at their whim to create more money.
Okay, now how much cash should somebody have just in case things go, you know what hits the fan?
I mean, I tell a lot of my wealthy clients to have $50,000 to $75,000 in $10 and $20 bills in their home, enough to last several months. And that's a lot for a lot of people, but enough, whatever your costs, whatever it costs you to live for a few months, you should have it in small denominated bills, cash in your house. Every time you cash your paycheck, you ought to ask for a few $100 in small bills and put them at home and keep it. And, you know, I think that's you look at the people in Greece. They'll tell you they wish they had done that when they could only get $60 a day out of the ATMs. So
yeah, well, the Greece is really struggling. We could be like Greece if our everything hits the fan.
Well, one of the biggest differences, I mean, Greece is the size. If you look at Greece, their GDP is just north of Alabama. So, I mean, the state of Alabama almost does as much GDP as Greece. It's not a big country, but in terms of in scope and relation, the biggest difference between Greece and the United States is Greece can't print.
Yeah, we have the ability to print, which makes it worse for them in that way.
Well, it just makes it more illusionary. We seem to be this bastion of state safety and strength. Yet, if it was a personal home, you know, I mean, we're borrowing money to pay the interest on our credit card bills.
But see, I'm not convinced that they can't keep that illusion going. Like, okay, let's say this ETF thing works. Why wouldn't they be able to have, they have this illusion going now, they take over the ETFs, they redo the currency, and the illusion keeps going?
Because I think that the illusion is just that. It's an illusion, and smart, sophisticated big money understands that, and I do believe that there will be entities, whether it be the Chinese or special drawing rights by the IMF, that will step up to issue something of substance. I think you can only water down the milk so much before it's no longer milk, and that's kind of what's happening here in the United States and to our dollar. I mean, ask yourself, what $1 million would have bought you, Sarah, when you were a young kid growing up?
Oh, I know. I think everything from understanding all this stuff, it seems just completely messed up. But I still wonder how long the illusion – I didn't think the illusion would last this long, but it is. And it's
because so few people question, because so few people live off the dole.
But if nobody questions – And
I think
illusion...
the rest of the world is questioning, and Greece is a catalyst for that.
Well, yeah.
I think the rest of the world is questioning the value of fiat, the value of fiat currency held in banking institutions that don't protect your safety. In fact, throw you out in the cold when things get in trouble. And I think that, you know, an illusion is not real. And when things get tough, the illusion becomes just that. It becomes a facade, and people run to things gravitate to things of tangibility and of strength and of sincerity. So I don't think that the game can go on indefinitely. I think it's gone on admirably for a lot longer than anyone would have thought possible. But these are very high stakes, Sarah. These are very, very high stakes. This is the top of the mountain in terms of, you know, what the odds or the stakes of the game are. So I think that is one of the things when I look back over the last 26 years, we've been writing a newsletter for 26 years, and we do every day now. Our website is milesfranklin.com, and you read that newsletter. And over the 26 years that I've been doing this, invariably, virtually everything we've ever talked about since 1989 has come true. However, we have been so far ahead of the curve in terms of what we have said. We have never been right on timing. We're always early, and in many cases, substantially early. And because what we do, our recommendations and our prognostications are based upon logic and economics and mathematics, and they have been able to add hidden variables into the equation that won't ultimately change the outcome, but have certainly changed the game and the time frame in which things have transpired. So
yeah, because things aren't based on logic and things, and the good companies don't do well on the stock market many times. So it's just it's very difficult to look at some of this stuff logically. You just hope that long term the logic wins out.
That's right. That's exactly right. And ultimately, it usually does. But you may pull the hair out of your head. In the meantime, I think you must have strong fingertips, and you must be able to hang on and trust your gut that you're right. That's the way I look at it. I trust my gut that everything I look at is not an illusion. The things that we are focusing on are real, are concrete. And when you look at them from that lens, it becomes a lot more scary of an endeavor than thinking everything is okay and trusting blindly in the mainstream, which I have lost just about all faith in.
Why do you think that they are? Do you think that that most economists that are out there on the mainstream really believe what they're saying, or do you think? I mean, yeah, I'm going to ask you that. Do they really believe what they're saying?
The mainstream people?
Yeah,
I think a lot of them do. Yeah. Most financial advisors learn more and more about less and less till they know everything about nothing. They think that the road to retirement is only paved with mutual funds and stock certificates.
Is it because they don't take the time to really understand the fundamentals and they just learn from the corporate people that are telling them stuff?
Absolutely. Do you know why people are called financial advisors?
No.
Do you know what they used to be called back in the 90s?
No.
They used to be called stockbrokers, and the reason they're not called stockbrokers anymore is because of the internet. Prior to the internet, it would be common for a stockbroker, he or she, to make 1 or 2% of every one of your trades in or out. But when Scottrade came along with the internet, all of a sudden the stockbrokers became a dinosaur. Who needs to pay a stockbroker 1 or 2%? When you can make that same trade on your own for $9. And if you're talking $1 million trade, well, you know,
exactly.
big difference. So the stockbrokers, realizing they were dead in the water, said we need to become value-added financial advisors. Now, prior to this, there would have been 1 or 2 financial advisors in a stock brokerage of 100 brokers. And the two financial advisors were the gray-haired $5,000 suit wearing guys that have been around for a long time that would manage your account for a fee. Well, now all the stockbrokers said, well, that's what we have to do because they don't need us anymore. So a stockbroker became a financial advisor. And the difference between a stockbroker and a financial advisor is one test on ethics. Now, the Series 7 to become a stockbroker is a tough test. But I think I used to be a financial advisor many moons ago. I don't remember the number of the test. I think it's the Series 25. I'm not sure. But the bottom line is that particular test, you don't even have to study for more than 30 minutes and you'll pass it. As far as I'm concerned, it's easy as can be. It's all ethics related. How to not wrong somebody. And if you're an honest person, you study for 30 minutes, you'll pass it and you're now a financial advisor. So a financial advisor, in many cases, is someone who didn't even graduate high school. They have a GED, could be. They pass the Series 7 and they pass the Series 25, and now they work for a brokerage that tells them what to invest in and where to put their funds and where to put their clients' funds. And,
so it's a bunch of blind leading the blind.
Not in every case, because that would be a blind stereotype, but in many cases, yes. A real financial advisor is someone who advises about different asset classes, who understands the issues surrounding currencies, the geopolitical events, understands commodities, understands precious metals, understands securities. We understand all of that. I used to be a financial advisor, but the reason I stopped being a financial advisor was the hypocrisy of the broker-dealers that we worked through. The broker-dealers didn't want us to write a newsletter, and they tore it apart every single day because of compliance. And the things that we were writing about would have only benefited the business, but compliance didn't allow them to do so.
And what was compliance? Something that anytime they thought it would hurt their ability to make money?
No. When you go to a typical brokerage house, you know, half of the space is compliance, because it's a compliance and litigation is a big thing in securities, and they just don't want to be sued.
They don't want to tell people what to do necessarily.
You can't say anything outside of a certain script as a stockbroker, or you violate some sort of SEC regulation. So we stopped doing that. But the moral of the story is I understand all of these things, and most of the people you talk to don't. Most of the financial advisors will tell you stocks and bonds and mutual funds and nothing else. And even if you try to have a discussion about foreign currencies, about...
Nobody even knows how to do that. That's why you're here.
That's the point. And that's why we put too much faith and too much stock, no pun intended, in the term financial advisor. If you are a doctor, you went to school for a long time, you became a resident, you paid your dues. If you are an attorney, you go to school for a long time, you go to law school, you pass your LSAT. If you're a dentist, etc. If you're a financial advisor, you're someone who passed two tests. You don't have to be a college graduate. You don't even have to be a high school graduate. So my point to you is that, and I'm sensationalizing this to a degree, but my point is that it's very important that when we look for financial advisors, that we take the time to interview them and to ask them the pertinent questions.
Well, I, you know, on my side, I actually don't mind the fact that they don't have to go through all this indoctrination before they become something. I don't like the fact that there's so much licensing sometimes.
Well, my only argument to that is that I have lots of friends who've changed career paths and go from being a mortgage broker to a financial advisor in 3 months. Well, how the hell did that happen?
Well, I don't.
How can you advise someone about their life savings with no formal background, no experience?
I agree with that. I just think that sometimes what you learn when you're going to school is what they want you to learn. And
well, that's all fine and well, too. But my point is, least if you go to school to learn a trade, you are invested. You are invested in the endeavor that you're doing. A doctor who spends 8, 9, 10 years in school is invested in being the best he can be.
And at least they're thinking about how to be better at it. And they've been spending a lot of time.
Absolutely. The financial advisors or people who work in brokerages oftentimes, I mean, I work with a lot of them. A lot of these brokerages will refer their clients to us, and a lot of the people that were referring business to us 1 year are gone the next, and someone else replaces them, because it's a very difficult business. It's a very, very difficult when you are a financial advisor to find people that trust you with their portfolio. The way advisors make money is by keeping money under management. And so it's not like making a trade here or there. It's about having money under management and performing well. So it's a tough gig. But nonetheless, I think that these are some of the questions that we need to ask when we are looking for a financial advisor. Are they capable of really advising us? Do they see the world the way that we do? Are there things perhaps that they don't understand that might actually be relevant or important to us?
If they're deer in the headlights with the question, you better run.
Well, that's just it. And if someone is in advisory capacity and can't advise you on the things that you should know, then are they really an advisor? That's kind of the question.
Well, I have one more question before we run out of time here, and we probably have to do this fairly quick. And I know this is going to be difficult. Now, if something does happen, do you think it'll be possible to manipulate the gold and silver prices, or do you think that will fluctuate with the market?
Well, I'm going to answer that in a very roundabout way. There's the term in economics called Gibson's paradox. Gibson's paradox is the inverse relationship between real interest rates and gold. And the theory is, with real high interest rates, nobody will buy gold because you can make a return with safety on treasuries or something like that. With real low interest rates, you have no opportunity cost for buying gold. And in the 90s, the Western central banks used to manipulate the price of gold by taking their gold that they owned in their own coffers and giving it to the commercial banks, leasing it to a handful of commercial banks at less than 1%. The commercial banks would take that gold and sell it to the market, driving the price down and killing any sentiment and interest for it, taking the proceeds of those sales and applying them to treasury sales. So the commercial banks then would take the money that they would sell short on the gold, they would buy treasuries, and they got to keep the spread between what they invested in treasuries and what they had to pay back on the small margin to buying the gold. The commercial banks were happy. They made hundreds of billions of dollars. The central banks were happy because they created an illusion of strength in the Western central bank currencies. We know all of this for many, many, many reasons, but in particular, there was a lawsuit by several years ago in Louisiana where Blanchard, another gold company, sued J.P. Morgan Chase and American Barrick, which is the largest producer of gold, for suppressing the gold prices. American Barrick said, this is ridiculous. We move for dismissal. And the judge in federal court in Louisiana said, no, there's a little bit more to it than meets the eye here. We're going to go to discovery. Upon that statement, the counsel for American Barrick said, fine, we did it. We've been suppressing the price of gold, but we've been doing it at the behest of J.P. Morgan, who's been doing it at the behest of the Central Bank of the United States. Therefore, we claim sovereign immunity. Now, the case itself was sealed. The results were sealed. We don't know exactly what was resolved, but we do know two things. Number one, in federal court in Louisiana, J.P. Morgan and American Barrick admitted to suppressing the price of gold. And number two, we do know that American Barrick, as a result, agreed to close their forward sell book, that they wouldn't hedge anymore on behalf of the U.S. government. So that's one thing. Now, this is what happened. They did this to keep people in dollars back in the 90s, to make everyone happy. And somewhere along the line, I would say 2005, 6, or 7, I really do believe that the Chinese got involved, and the Chinese started doing the same thing for a different reason, which will answer your question here. What I have believed that the Chinese have been doing for the last several years is, imagine they're a giant man, a giant Chinese man with $2 trillion in his right pocket and $2 trillion in treasuries in his left pocket. And it's a quandary. What do we do? They see what the Western central banks have been doing with gold because they themselves have a strong affinity for it. So they decide to join the game. And I believe that they have been suppressing the price of every commodity on the planet for the last several years, not just gold and silver, but also iron ore, aluminum, copper, fossil fuels, you name it, oil and gas. They are driving the price down with a tremendous amount of leverage.
Why?
I'll explain that in 1 second. And just so you know, when you use futures contracts to suppress commodities, it works a whole lot easier than stocks. If you want to open a margin account with stocks, you can do 2 times what you put in, or double what you put in. 100 grand will allow you to margin another 100 grand. If I want to buy a 100-ounce gold contract right now that controls $115,000, it costs me just north of $3,000. You start buying a whole bunch of short contracts as a commercial bank or as a Chinese bank, you can drive the price down quickly. But why would they suppress the price of all of the world's commodities instead of just accumulating them, if that's really what they want to do? Because first, they drive down the price with all the dollars they're choking on. They pull money out of their right pocket, and they start suppressing on all of the world's commodity exchanges every commodity they can think of: gold, silver, platinum, oil, copper, aluminum, lead, zinc, you name it. Drive the prices down, and you sell short on all the commodities. So you're pulling money out of your right pocket and starting to spread it around by shorting all of the world's commodities. And maybe at the same time, you start buying S&P futures. And Dow futures and all the DAX futures and all of the other exchanges around the world to make people think they need to run to the equity markets. And when they suppress these commodity markets, they do it two ways. They do it counterintuitively to what's happening in the world. You see chemical weapons going off in Syria. You see Greece defaulting. You see problems in Ukraine. You see all of these things going on, and gold and silver don't react over the last 3 years. In fact, they go down. So the Chinese or the big commercial banks who are accumulating the metal, like J.P. Morgan, who, by the way, over the last year and a half has accumulated almost
they're buying a lot of it. The price is going down, and then you see them buying a ton of it. Yeah.
Silver as the price has been going down. So they drive the price down.
And then buy
counterintuitively to what is happening in the world, so people aren't looking to it and running to it. And also technically, they know where the technical resistance levels are. They know where they are on the charts. They paint the tape. They'll drive the price down below 50 and 200-day moving averages that get all the algorithms that control the hedge funds and the mutual funds out, all the financial advisories that rely on technical analysis out. So they drive it down below the resistance levels. They drive it down counterintuitively, and they drive it down with a tremendous amount of leverage with all the dollars they're choking on. Then, after they've done that, they take the proceeds of all those short sales, because when you sell short, you're spending money to sell short, you're getting money back. With the proceeds of those short sales, or with the rest of the money in their right-hand pocket, they buy up the world's physicals at subsidized prices with no competition. The U.S. Mint has sold more gold and silver eagles over the last month, just about, than they have in any other month previous. The demand, enough so that they shut down in July because they ran out of supply. Completely ran out of supply.
And so supply-demand stuff is just not working. If there was a... If they run out of supply, you would think the price would be skyrocketing.
That's exactly correct. They have disconnected the demand from the price by using paper contracts. So they drive down the price, and then they buy up all of the world's physicals. Getting physical gold and silver has never been more difficult.
So can you still invest in gold and silver right now without having problems?
Some of the silver, almost all the silver, is anywhere from 2 to 6 weeks back ordered. It's getting harder, and I'm one of 27 companies in the world on the U.S. Mint website. I'm very high up on the food chain, and getting product is ridiculous. So to follow this analogy to its end, they sell everything to drive down the prices. They goose the equity markets to make people, to misdirect the public into looking at equities. They buy up all of the world's physicals. The Chinese buy 4 to 5 times the copper they need for annual production. Read that in the Wall Street Journal last year. That's common for them. As the price is going down, they buy up all of the world's rare earth minerals, all the world's rare earth metals. They buy up as much of they're the largest importer of gold and silver in the world, and they are the largest producer of gold in the world. And yet they do not export an ounce. They are buying up everything they can at subsidized levels, but there's one piece of the puzzle left. There's one piece of the puzzle. All of those short positions that you put on to drive down the price, what do you do about those? When the price starts to come up, you're in big trouble, right? You have to cover those short positions. How do you do it? Remember your left pocket that's filled with treasuries, where interest rates have to move up essentially at some point? And if it's a depleting asset that they have in their left pocket, they know mathematically interest rates cannot stay at these levels forever. They keep threatening to raise interest rates. So what do you do about covering those shorts? Well, you reach into your left pocket and you pull out the stack of treasuries you're choking on, and you slowly, judiciously sell your treasuries, as they have been doing. The Chinese admit they have been selling their treasuries. They're not buying anymore. They're selling. You slowly sell your treasuries, and you use the proceeds of those sold treasuries to cover your short positions in all of the world's commodities. And now, when you're all said and done, you've retained value for your dollar. That was to short all the commodities and to allow you to buy this stuff cheap. You've retained value for your treasuries because you slowly sold them before interest rates popped, and sold them slowly enough to not pop interest rates. And with the proceeds of those sold treasuries, you cover your shorts on all of the world's commodities that you shorted. And when it's all said and done, you're out of dollars, you're out of treasuries, and you bought everything that the world has as relevant to the next super cycle, to moving forward to the next generation.
You're sitting on top of the wealth pile.
That's exactly right. And you did it with paper, and you did it at subsidized levels, and you did it without competition. It's like the no-look pass in basketball.
So China's setting themselves up to
exactly
take over the
right
world. They're the next What do you call it?
Not only that, they used all of our dollars to build these ghost cities. They have the infrastructure on the inside built up. It doesn't matter if their system runs into big problem and their economy collapses. Why doesn't it matter? Because we're talking about, let's say we're talking about $1 trillion in problems that they have. They have several trillion in assets. We don't. We don't have
a
balance
sheet that
looks
like
theirs.
People maybe will move into them once they become the new empire.
Well, that's just it. They'll have the largest military. They'll have the most money. They'll have all of the world's commodities and maybe even a gold-backed currency that the rest of the world wants a part of. So my point to you is that I think that manipulation was done in the 90s to make people think that the Swiss franc and that the British pound and the German Deutschmark and the U.S. dollar were the currencies to be in, period, no matter what. And so that people would keep making loans and buying things. And that's how central bankers get wealthy, by making loans in the fractional reserve system. But now I would say that the Western central banks are manipulating the gold price to back out of their short positions and maybe to accumulate. You look at JP Morgan accumulating literally the largest stockpile of silver in the world in their own house account as the price of silver has been falling. That is what is happening. It's the no-look pass. It's the misdirection. Look over here while we pickpocket the world's wares.
Yeah, that seems obvious to me that that's going on. That's why I asked you about it. I'm so glad you explained it, because I hadn't thought about the details of China and how they're doing this, but it's so obvious it's being manipulated, and there's no reason it should be so low. But how can people get hold of you? Running out of time here a little bit, so I want to...
We've been in Wayzata for 26 years. Wayzata, Minnesota. We publish a free daily newsletter. It's free. It's comprehensive. We have phenomenal writers every day at milesfranklin.com. That's MILESFRANKLIN.com. You can sign up for our free daily newsletter. Our phone number is 1-800-822-8080. Our brokers all have a minimum of 22 years of experience. State of Minnesota is very, very relevant to this quick little recap here, in that the state of Minnesota is the only state in America that regulates precious metals dealers. We are beholden to the Commissioner of Commerce. We have a $200 million surety bond in place. All of our employees are background checked, et cetera. But on top of all of that, in a federally non-regulated industry, in 26 years and $5 billion in sales, we've never had one customer complaint, not one. We have an A-plus rating with the Better Business Bureau. And if you were to Google and search as hard as you could to find a complaint about us, you'd be hard-pressed to do it. We're very proud of our reputation.
Now you just said that. That was dangerous. Now someone's going to put one up there.
Yeah, well, if they put it up, it has to be substantiated. And,
that's
and certainly,
true. I'm giving you
we're
crap.
Not worried about that. We worked real hard to make a real good reputation. We're honest people and have done a lot of business in the right way. And so if people want to call and get their questions asked, we're all or the questions answered, rather.
Well,
we're all about education first. We welcome people to call, to email, to get in touch with any of us here, and we take the time to get to know them, to build a relationship, to answer their questions, and to hopefully earn their business.
Well, I'm going to have all your information up on my radio page, and my show is going to be moving to a new network, and we're going to be airing in New York area, and we're also going to be on over 90 channels. So I definitely want you back to give a little bit more information on this.
It would be my pleasure, Sarah. I think the more people who can open their eyes to what's happening around us, the better. And, you know, the sad thing about what I do is that it's really hard to talk to people about it, because it's not a happy topic. It's not something that is exciting. It's not something that is happy. It's actually...
It's scary.
You know, the harbinger of bad times, perhaps. But, you know, there's opportunity in bad times as well. But more importantly is the necessity to take care of our family, first and foremost, to be prepared and to take the steps necessary to prepare. And even if we were wrong and nothing happened, the worst thing you did is you accumulated some 5,000-year wealth. You perhaps got out of debt. You maybe even have some food and water and maybe even a gun and some ammunition and all the things that would be necessary if the you-know-what does hit the fan. And if it doesn't, so what? But it's very important to build up your life raft before the boat goes down, because if you try to do it as the boat is sinking, you're going down with the ship.
Well, words of wisdom. Okay, well, great. Well, thank you so much for joining us today.
It's awesome, Sarah. It's my pleasure. Anytime.
Again, if you want to see any contact information on my guests or to get information on how to reach my shows going forward, go to my website at sarahwestall.com, and you will be able to get any of my past shows. You'll also be able to hear all about the new things that I have coming up. My website was supposed to be redone a couple weeks ago, but it's been put on hold as we've been incorporating all this new stuff that we have going on. And it's an exciting new time. I'm pretty excited to be airing live and also being available on so many different networks, iTunes and iHeart Radio and YouTube and all over the place. So you will always be able to go to sarahwestall.com and to get my latest shows. And I will also have exclusive interviews there because the new show that I'm doing that I'm airing live will be shorter. It will always only be like 49, 50 minutes, which is going to be so hard for me. So what I'm doing is I'm going to be airing the longer interviews on my website if it happens to be longer. And you'll know, I'll talk about that as we go forward. But for now, everybody have a wonderful day.